Hi, chaps.
Hello there. Is that Tom McDermott's there? Can I hear River behind? Is there in the background? Chris Scudder?
It's not a river. It's actually a fountain. A multi-fountain, actually. I'm just down on the riverfront, down in the Don, River Don, about right across the river from the rather lovely new stadium here, which we were hoping was going to be England's venue on Monday night for the Japan game. However, it's turned out a bit different, hasn't it?
What are your thoughts on that, Scuds, last night? I was talking about that. Should they have gone for it? Played his best 11?
I don't know. Do you know what? I think... I just think their second string is better than ours, you know. England don't have the strength and depth that, you know, Belgium do. I mean, it's a golden generation for them, and I think that was reflected in the game, wasn't it, really?
My only thought yesterday, Scuds, was we were at work building up to it, and we were doing lives with, you probably come across Kaveh Solokol out there in Kaliningrad and Rob Dorset, and you're building up to it and getting excited. And then the team news broke, and you just felt really surreal for the first time in my life about a World Cup game. And I know we haven't really been in that position before. I think we did win the first two games in 2006, but I can't really remember such an experimental lineup in the next game in that one. But it just seemed to suck the wind out of the sort of the sails a little bit. I felt sorry for some of the players who came in, those eight changes for England, and maybe less so the nine for Belgium, who seemed to adapt well, including former Manchester United player Januzaj, which sort of brought a wry smile to my face. But it just seemed to... For those guys like Vardy, who probably won't play in a World Cup again, it seems a shame that it was done in such a sort of disjointed manner and not given an opportunity, maybe three or four changes. What did you think about that? Oh, I think we may have lost Scott.
Is he gone again?
I think he's gone in Rostov. Yeah, we'll crack on without him because I've actually got the in-laws coming over for a barbecue relatively shortly. So we'll. But yeah, what did you think about that? I mean, that was just for me. It was slightly bizarre. Never felt a World Cup following England since we talked about sort of falling in love with it in Italia 90, to have that no jeopardy, was it? It was a surreal feeling.
Really, really strange, really strange. You talked about Italia 90 there. I remember the Egyptian game, I think it was the last one, with the Mark Wright header. I think that was the deciding group game there. And I think, we've not been as fortunate, really. Certainly in World Cups since that. Obviously, the Argentina, that was a round of 16, wasn't it? But I think it's a rare situation for England to be. And I think if you just look back through history down to 66, to be afforded the last group game, it's more or less of a free hit. We will only be able to judge, I think, later on, or certainly after the Colombia game, Southgate, or if we approach it in the right way by making so many changes.
It's funny that people do it in life, don't they? But they do it in World Cup, certainly. After two wins, they were great, don't get me wrong, exhilarating in parts against Tunisia. And it was mayhem against Panama to score six goals. But people sort of get ahead, don't they? We sort of get so sucked up in the future. But you think, in reality, it's against Colombia, who've got Falcao and James Rodriguez and Cuadrado and Quintero. They've got some good players that, potentially it's going to be all over on the night. So maybe worrying about this quarterfinals and semifinals is premature.
I think Southgate said, didn't he? But I think I like Gary Neville's comment after the match, actually, because he said that England should now feel really positive about the situation they're in, because if they do map ahead and they do look ahead, which is, supporters do it all the time. I've plotted many a route out on Twitter the last couple of weeks. And I think that England will never have a better chance to get to the semi-finals. Colombia are a very good team. Of course, they've got Falcao, James Rodriguez. I'm hoping, from an England point of view, I'm hoping he doesn't quite make it.
Sure, yeah.
On Tuesday. But England probably will never have as good an opportunity to get to the semi-finals than what it is. And they have to go into that Colombian game full of confidence, because there's going to be eight more changes. I think it was a seven or eight yesterday.
It was eight yesterday for England, nine for Belgium, yeah.
Right, so six or seven lads at least are going to come back in. I think the team that started the Panama game, maybe Dele Alli, do you think,
for Loftus-Cheek, possibly. I mean, I thought it's interesting because we had this debate on a Manchester United front before about Marcus Rashford. And the problem with Rashford, I suppose, is he lights it up in moments of sheer brilliance, but then it's sort of sometimes fundamentals of where he plays. And I think that we saw missing Harry Kane yesterday, that Harry Kane doesn't have that breathtaking speed or skill, but he's just 8 out of 10 at everything, isn't he? And he holds the ball up. And
where would you play Rashford if you were to start him, Ed? I think it's an issue for club and country, actually.
He's not really a nine, is he? I was talking about what Kane offers you in terms of showing for the ball and linking things and having that presence to occupy defenders. And just sometimes you think with Marcus, there's that, and it's probably been rushed through to a certain extent, isn't it? That maybe those fundamentals haven't come together, because you think Kane learns all that playing in Championship on loan at Millwall and then Norwich, and he's gone to different places, that maybe those sort of basics of hold up play and things have been more ingrained into his play, and then he's added the sort of finishing and everything to it. I mean, it's tricky, isn't it? Because I mean, it sort of sticks mind the FA Cup final was Rashford just passing the ball out of play at one point
sure.
against Chelsea, and but he's
I think
he's
the consistency you've mentioned it there. Yeah, I think the consistency is important. The consistent playing in one position, you know, he's had that period now where he's fresh and he's new and he can come on from the bench and make an impact. But I think now he's got to start focusing and looking at trying to nail down one position. Now, if that's out wide for a couple of years, then so be it. That won't do any harm whatsoever.
There's not wingers and there's not really a second striker now. So it's that kind of in-between sort of forward, we call it now, don't we, in terminology, that wide player. And it's whether he wants to be that or could he be a central striker on his own, because he's got the height and physique potentially he's going to fill out, isn't he? That
he's physically certainly yeah, he looks really impressive. He's incredibly strong. He's added that to his strength to his pace, but you know, he's not going to dislodge Lukaku at club level.
Yeah.
And he's not going to do the same to Kane at international level. And so you have to wonder, is it worth him going out on loan maybe perhaps this season and saying, right, I'm going to play majority of my games for another team on loan up front or out wide. And that's going to be my position.
Yeah.
And really show what he can do and get that consistency. Because I think if you look at young players throughout the years, Giggs always played wide left.
Mm-hmm.
And you look at other younger players. Ashley Cole was, at Arsenal, he's another one that went on and did great things with club and country. He always played as a left back. That was his position.
Yeah.
You find that these youngsters that don't sort of cement a position early on, that they, their progress can be stalled. And you get people like Kevin De Bruyne who may have to go elsewhere.
Yeah,
and Salah before coming back and really making an impact, really. But
yeah, and it's whether he has that kind of range of passing and that vision to play wide, I suppose, long term, isn't it? It's whether he's going to get the assists that you'd want, maybe that Martial could actually give you as a Manchester United perspective, because he's maybe got a little bit more peripheral kind of awareness of what's going on. But it's interesting you sort of talk about that with Rashford and saw Vardy last night, and I suppose Vardy, that was almost a prime game for him in the sense that Belgium would dominate possession, that his speed on the counter attack would probably do well rather than against a lesser opponent when they'd be camped in, and he wouldn't be able to utilise that. But he kind of gave a vindication of Southgate, didn't it? But gave him clarity as well, that you thought, actually, people have criticised Raheem Sterling and things like that. But you could see that he threaded the team together, even if his technique and composure when finishing isn't great. He does knit things together, maybe more so than Rashford in terms of his understanding of where to play, just because he plays a similar role at Manchester City and played all season doing that.
Yeah, I think so. I think, you've hit the nail on the head there. I think that on Vardy, I think even if he's having a bad game, you're going to be in a match against him. If you're central defender and you're playing against him, he's going to run the channels. He's going to run in behind. He's going to, he's going to ask questions. He's going to come in and he's going to challenge.
He'd be good if England were leading, wouldn't he, and up against?
Absolutely fantastic. And this is what I mean, why there might be one or two benefits from the game against Belgium, because I think that you've given him minutes. He could come on and make that impact from the bench. He's going to, you can imagine if you... I'm thinking we're going to face extra time at some point. You'd imagine that. And, you can imagine bringing Vardy on in the latter stages, perhaps to play up front with Kane and ask some questions and create room there. So I do think that's definitely a positive. But you mentioned Sterling there as well. And I think the only thing that's been missing from England at the moment is a Sterling goal, I think. Certainly with sort of the criticism
and the
debate about it.
Like Platt in Italia 90, like we talked about Paul Parker, didn't we? You need that kind of...
That
midfielder to get a couple to just kind of ease the pressure on Kane.
On the subject of strikers there as well, while we're talking about it, what do you think about Falcao? Because I think, was that his first World Cup goal?
Possibly, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was. I think that was his first.
He's 32 now.
And a different kind of striker to Vardy. Didn't quite fulfil his potential or get back to full fitness in England, but certainly he's got to be one that England have got to watch. And if James Rodriguez isn't playing as well, there'll be a lot of pressure on him, I think, to deliver as well, because this is a passionate nation as well. They'll expect to be England.
Yeah.
They'll think England is... They might look at England and think, you know what? That's a favourable draw for us.
Yeah, stop Kane scoring and you've got a good chance, really. And maybe set pieces as well, because it's interesting. I heard Alan Shearer, I think, say on the BBC that England had only created, like, even in the Panama game, 6 or 7 chances from open play, which is pretty low, relatively, he was saying, compared to what Belgium had done. And I suppose that's been the key, hasn't it? It's been the imaginative set pieces and perhaps a sense that we've got an advantage, often with Stones and Maguire, if the delivery's good. But then, Colombia are pretty big, aren't they? Got Mina and De Vincent Sanchez, who are a pretty physical character, so it may not be as easy to dominate aerially as it was in the other games. So they're probably looking at it that way. I think it's strange, isn't it? Your nostalgia and affection for players, because even though Falcao was not at United a long time, which obviously I support and you do and follow the team. And even from a Premier League perspective at Chelsea as well, you get that affection for players, don't you? So when you see a former Premier League player kind of as a pundit in the crowd, you sort of have that sort of like, oh, there he is. And
I think
it's nice to see him just battle back, because it was a horrible injury, wasn't it, that he had, I think, to be
horrific. I mean, yeah, as well, he wasn't in his early 20s. It was quite, you know, sort of 28, 29 when it happened as well, wasn't it? So not quite the Ibrahimovic level, but yeah, it'll be interesting to see what he does and how Colombia view England. It might be worth certainly something I've been looking at the last couple of days, since I kind of suspected they'd win yesterday. But you've seen the 16 teams that are left there, Ed. Have you got a winner in mind now that you've had a chance to digest?
It's funny because Croatia have been exhilarating, haven't they, with Rakitic and Modric and people like that. But you just wonder whether maybe... People said that their average age is older, maybe that they'll tire a little bit, but it's hard to see. They seem to be on a roll, and they seem to have to keep possession so well, don't they? A bit like, you know, Real Madrid, the way that the Modric runs the show for them. Uruguay, we said before, I think in the previous recording, we attempted with Scuds, and he dropped off and rust off again. Hopefully get Chris to go back, who's got about 30, 40 years of broadcasting experience, has been in Russia covering the World Cup, for guys that are listening for the first time. But my wife's just pulling a funny face at me, actually, out the window, so apologies for that.
Family barbecues are calling. But just on that Uruguay point.
No, it's fine. No, it's fine. Don't worry. I've got a minute. But it's about the teams in the World Cup. I think Uruguay, we talked about having 100% record, and we mentioned dark horses before. But maybe the fact they've got through 100% that they will ignite. Maybe the fact that Argentina snuck through. I know their problems have been going for a long time, haven't they? Even since. Arguably the final last year, last World Cup, they've struggled since then, struggled in qualifying, just snuck through in the final match, qualifying with a Messi hat-trick, I believe. So they've got there, but you wonder, will that sort of, you know, squeaky bum time kind of get them through now? Will they ignite, or will it just be more of the same?
Because there doesn't seem to be... With Argentina, and to a certain extent, yes, you will get the surprise element. You will get your David Platt appearing, and you will get your Roger Miller or your kind of you know, surprise element to the team. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. But I think that you mentioned Uruguay there, and I think if you've got Godin and Jimenez at centre half and Cavani and Suarez up front, I think that's the kind of solid base and, you know, attacking flair that you've got, and you know those guys are going to be there, and everything else sort of dotted around them.
And
whereas if Messi's having a bit of an off day, is he going to go with Aguero? What sort of impact has that had in the dressing room and behind the scenes? Yeah, Dybala's there, of course, as well. You know, what's the kind of feel like it? Because I think you are only as good as the players that don't play.
Dybala seems to never play because he's too similar to Messi, apparently. And Higuain and Aguero, list the names, and Di Maria. You just think there's the great names, but it doesn't seem to connect, whatever. And it's Sampaoli's trying where other managers have tried and failed, I guess. So it's an interesting one with Argentina. It's tough to find, apart from Croatia, it's a team that's kind of looked good from top to bottom, isn't it? But Brazil,
Ronaldo got it in him, do you think? I think Brazil, fantastic. I think they started a bit slow. Yeah. And I think there was a key moment, I think, late on in the Mexico game. I think Neymar, I wouldn't say he was struggling, but I think he was maybe fighting to get found his best form. And there was a penalty incident that I think VAR, and it was denied and so on and so forth. But they nicked it, didn't they, late on, I think. Was it 2-0 in the game against, who are they playing now? Was it Costa Rica, was it?
Yeah, I think perhaps.
And then from then, the night in Serbia, that they look great. And you think that the longer that they can stay in the tournament and the fitter that Neymar will get.
Yeah, he started a friendly, didn't he? Was it in Austria, I think, just before the World Cup?
That's pretty much
what all he's done. So I think he's building up, and you think he's going to, he's 26. I mean, it's ridiculous when you look at his record. Is it 56, 57 goals? And Pele's got 77. He's 26, Neymar.
Yeah, you look at the greats. I don't think you can rule them. Certainly you can't rule them out. You'd be surprised if they get to the semi-finals. Yeah. But you just wonder if Ronaldo as well will have another say. You Modest dragged Portugal to the final of the Euros. You know, it'd be one hell of a task if he manages to get that Portuguese team anywhere near the final.
Yeah, like Brazil in 2002, wasn't it? Just that ability, with people like Rivaldo and Ronaldinho and Cafu, they just have that ability to ignite in a particular moment. And Ronaldo can do that. You know, effectively, football is so low scoring. It's so close games. Every game seems to be decided by won or predominantly in this World Cup, bar a few kind of blowouts. It's been really close. I think maybe those people can do it. If Ronaldo can do it, if he can get past Uruguay and crack on through that side of the draw, you think, you know, why not get a bit of momentum?
Phenomenal. Yeah, phenomenal.
He needs three or four moments a game, doesn't he? And the fact is, he's such a triple threat, right foot, left foot, and with his head, that there's always a chance he could get something.
I think there's an intelligence to his play that some people don't always see as well. For instance, he bought the free kick for the third, the hat-trick goal against Spain on the edge of the ball. I think Piqué or Ramos, you know, he sort of enticed them in and he went down and then he was there to hammer it in. But
just manages sort of his energy well, doesn't he, as well? That's why he's
fantastic.
He uses when to run in the game and when he needs to explode and when he needs to sprint, take someone on, like win the penalty against Spain early. He did that little dribble and got past the player. And yeah, just seems to be very clever, which for all of us in our 30s, you start to realise
Another interesting one is... Yeah, he does. Yeah, no, he does. I was going to say, I was just looking through the statistics then from the Spain Portugal game and the statistic about De Gea not having a save to make until the third match of the tournament, which was bizarre. And then I think that's an interesting. It'd be interesting what you think about interesting story.
Ronaldo, didn't he? Yeah.
Yeah, his error there, but it'd be interesting what you make of that story. I don't think the Spanish are quite as impressed with him as perhaps the English fans and certainly United supporters are. What are your thoughts on De Gea?
It's just a short sample of games, isn't it? I mean, personally, I think his agility is phenomenal. I've never seen anything like it. Some of the shots.
Hi guys, just a little intro precursor to the podcast you're about to hear, which is recorded with journalist Tom McDermott, who follows Manchester United in particular in Manchester and England. He's got a book coming out about England, and Chris Scudder, long-term broadcaster for other people, including Sky News for a long time. He's covered many, many World Cups. He's out in Russia currently working for the host broadcaster. He dips in at the start of this from Rostov, where the game will be Japan's match against Belgium Monday night. He's by a fountain. He drops out, though. He's lost his signal. Similarly, Tom, towards the end of the chat, loses his signal. But apologies for that. And we will hopefully crack on, hopefully get this in front of the podcast, and then you can listen to it, get in touch with your thoughts. I'm a sports broadcaster in the UK, working for Sky Sports, Ed Draper, 81 on Twitter. Love to hear you. But talking about all things World Cup here, what we've made of it, and how surreal, from an English perspective, that match against Belgium was, with nothing on the line. 9 changes for Belgium and 8 for England. Slightly disjointed game. Cheers, guys. Hope you enjoy it.
The podcast you just heard was published with Anchor. Got something you want to say to the creator of this show? Send them a voice message using the Anchor app, free for iOS and Android.